3, 2, 1. Hey guys, welcome to the podcast, and today we are joined by Chloe.
Hello.
And Angel.
Hi.
And Angel's going to be in the podcast for the next 3 episodes because we're filming them all in advance. And we wanted Angel in the podcast because of the fact.
I'm sick.
Yeah. And Chloe isn't going to talk much, so we wanted Angel in it.
Yeah. You don't want to hear my sick voice.
Yeah, so we are going to start with... We wanted to see if jigsaw puzzles are nerdy or not. Not jigsaw puzzles, just puzzles in general.
Yeah.
And... I'm going to start with the origin of jigsaw puzzles. And Angel and Chloe are just going to be commenting on it sort of thing. And yeah, the origin of jigsaw puzzles go back to the 1760s when European map makers pasted maps onto wood and cut them into small pieces. John Spilsbury, an engraver and mapmaker, is credited with inventing the first jigsaw puzzle in 1767. That's a long time ago.
I know.
Like 300 years ago, is that?
I think so. My brain's not working too much.
Well, I'll just continue. The dissected, I don't know, map has been a successful educational toy ever since. American and Australian children still learn geography by playing with puzzles maps of the United States or the world. The 18th century inventors of jigsaw puzzles would be amazed to see the transformation of the last 250 years, so it's like close to 300. Children's puzzles have moved from lessons to entertainment, showing diverse subjects like animals, nursery rhymes, and modern tales of superheroes. But the biggest surprise for the early puzzle makers would be how adults have embraced puzzling over the last century.
Oh, wow. I don't know any of that, basically.
Yeah. Well, now we're going to go into puzzling as a hobby. Puzzles for adults emerged around the 1900s, and by 1908, a full-blown craze was in progress in the United States. Contemporary writers depicted the inexorable progression of the puzzle addict. From the skeptic who first ridiculed puzzles as a silly and childish, to the perplexed puzzler who ignored meals, wanting just one more piece, to the blurry-eyed victor who finally put in the last piece in the wee hours of the morning. The puzzles of these days were quite a challenge. Most had pieces that the brown area roof fit next to the blue sky. A sneeze or a careless move could undo an evening's work because the pieces did not interlock. And unlike children's puzzles, the adult puzzles had no guide on the box. If the title was vague or misleading, the true subject could remain a mystery until the last pieces were fit into place. Oh, God. Oh, my God. My little sister and little brother in the background.
Yeah, I would need them.
Because wood puzzles had to be cut one piece at a time, they were expensive. A 500-piece puzzle typically cost $5 in the 1908, far beyond that means of average worker who earned only $50 per month. High society, however, embraced a new amusement. Peak sales came on Saturday morning when customers selected puzzles for their weekend house parties in Newport and other country streets. So, first of all, workers only got paid $50 per month in 1908.
Oh, wow. But I know handmade stuff are very expensive.
Yeah. Angel, you got anything to say about it?
Not really.
I watch this guy off YouTube who cracks puzzles. I watch him every time he uploads. And it's like crazy because sometimes it takes him like over 2 hours sometimes just to get a puzzle.
Yeah.
And he never gets hints.
Mm.
It's just crazy how puzzles are.
Mm.
Okay, so the next few years brought two significant innovations. First, Parker Brothers, the famous game manufacturer, introduced figure pieces into its pastime brand puzzles. Figure pieces made puzzles a bit easier to assemble, but the fascination of pieces shaped like dogs, birds, and other recognizable objects more than offset the somewhat reduced challenge. Second, pastimes and other brands moved to an interlocking style and reduced the risk of spilling or losing pieces. Pastime puzzles were so successful that Parker Brothers stopped making games and devoted its entire factory to puzzle production in 1909. Following this craze, puzzles continued as a regular adult diversion for the next two decades. Now, what I find about weird about this is in 1908, it was like a normal thing for adults to do. Like, it still is, but
you see more kids doing it, like teenagers, kind of, rather.
More like children, though.
Yeah, but I know there is some teenagers who really do get into it.
Yeah. With the onset of the Great Depression in 1929, puzzles for adults enjoyed a resurgence of popularity, peaking in early 1933 when sales reached an astounding 10 million per week. Puzzles seemed to touch a chord, offering an escape from the troubled times, as well as an opportunity to succeed in the modest way. Completing a jigsaw gave the puzzler a sense of accomplishment that was hard to come by when the unemployment rate was climbing above 25%. With incomes depleted, home amusements like puzzles replaced outside entertainment like restaurants and nightclubs. Puzzles became more affordable too. Many of the unemployed architects, carpenters, and other skilled craftsmen began to cut jigsaw puzzles in home workshops, shops, and sell them or rent them locally. During the 1930s craze for puzzles, drugstores and circulating libraries added puzzle rentals to their offerings. They charged 3 to 10 cents per day, depending on the size. So people started making their own puzzles at home.
They're pretty cool.
I kind of want to do that now.
I kind of want to do it too.
Just get a picture of Harper.
Yeah. Basically, anybody, you can put like, get a big giant family photo, all of us come together, and then make a puzzle out of that.
Yeah. The autumn of 1932 brought a novel concept, the weekly jigsaw puzzles. The die-cut jig of the week retailed for 25 cents and appeared on the newsstands every Wednesday. People rushed to buy them and to be the first among their friends to solve that week's puzzle. There were dozens of weekly series, including Picture Puzzle Weekly, Bewitching Weekly, Ziggers Weekly, and featuring popular films, movie cuts, and the competition from free advertising puzzles and the inexpensive weekly puzzles. The makers of hand-cut wood puzzles were hard-pressed to keep their customers, yet the top-quality brands like Parker Pastimes retained a loyal following throughout the Depression, despite the higher prices. Indeed, the Depression led to the birth of Parker Puzzles, long dubbed the Rolls-Royce of jigsaw puzzles. Frank Ware and John Henriques. I don't know who any of these people are, sorry. Young men with no job prospects cut their first puzzle at the dining room table in 1932. While their firms were cutting costs and quality, Parr steadily improved their puzzles and marked them to affluent movie stars, industry lists, and even royalty. So puzzles were like so famous to the point where puzzle makers were like becoming millionaires.
That would actually be cool.
Yeah.
I wonder how hard the hardest was at that time. Oh,
that'd be a very big puzzle.
I wonder how many people solved it.
Mm. Do you guys want to go into the random part or find out more about the thing?
I think it's fine. I reckon puzzles are... I reckon we should just rate it if puzzles are dirty or not.
Angel, why don't you give your opinion, and if there's any reasoning, give the reasoning. Oh, you just went really bad for a second there. I think that they are nerdy because, first of all, people can buy make them at home. They don't need to go out and like really talk to many people. Second of all, it just seems like a introverted sort of thing to do, and the stereotypical nerd, they're kind of always seen doing a puzzle or like writing in their book or reading, that sort of thing.
For me, I think it's like 50-50, because I don't really do puzzles, but sometimes I do, but I'm not one of those people who would keep playing a puzzle. I might touch it once a year, basically, if I'm lucky enough. If I'm lucky enough, I might touch a puzzle once a year.
Yeah.
I think if you do puzzles for a living, then I reckon it is nerdy. But if you're not doing it like as a living, I don't think it's nerdy.
Mm.
Like, I know some families do game night.
Yeah.
I don't think that's nerdy. I think that's just family coming together.
Mm. All right, well, a lot of the listeners will probably have experience with this topic. Fake friends.
Da, da, da.
Does anybody want to share experience before I start or after I finish?
I think after you finished.
Okay. Fake friends are a term used to describe fair weather or selfish friends. True friends are like diamonds, precious and rare, while fake friends are like autumn leaves found everywhere. A faithful friend is a medicine of life. Friends are rightly called an alter ego, and they are perhaps those people in whom we can share our joys and sorrows. Adversity is the litmus test of any friendship. Fake friends are those friends who deceive us and break our trust somewhere down the line. They talk behind our back rather than talking to face to face. In times of adversity, they desert others and leave them in a lurch. one should be careful while choosing friends and keep such fake friends at arm's length. Joanne Jett had once rightly remarked, "You got nothing to lose. You don't lose when you lose fake friends. It is always good to keep fake or fair weather friends at arm's length. Remember, a man is known by the company he keeps." Now, do you guys have any stories or anything?
Yeah. I'll let you go, Angel. You haven't really talked.
Yeah.
Well, there was this one girl last year that always talked behind my back and always talking to one of my other shrew friends about me.
Yeah.
How about who's you, Brody?
Me?
Yeah.
Well, with all the stories I kind of want to talk about, I could potentially get in a lot of drama with school at the moment, but or even, like, legally get in trouble, but I could probably talk about one from primary school.
Go for it.
So there was this one friend, we're just going to call him Frankie. And Frankie, he always was nice to me. We always hung out. I had very few friends in primary school, but I tried to keep, like, the ones I could trust.
Mm.
And Frankie, he was, like, always nice talking to me. And I always talked to him about my crushes and, like, you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And yet, do I know he went to all my enemies and was talking to them about what I told him. Mm. And he also went to he went to a few of my crushes as well and told them. Yeah. And he slowly started bullying me as well, so yeah.
Ah, that's crazy.
Yeah. It isn't really eventful, but, like, the other ones, oh god, they are, like, really bad, and they're kind of still ongoing, so.
I know.
Mm. Alright, you want to talk about any stories, Chloe?
Oh, I have this one, because I don't trust people that easy. And when I was in primary, I had this one friend, and we always fight, and it was like we're friends, and then next week we weren't friends, like, but we think. Then I found out what she was doing behind my back, and then I kind of wanted to fight her. There was almost a fight, yeah, after school.
Can you tell us what she was doing or no?
Oh, she was saying shit about me and, like, my family and all that. And I don't take shit from nobody who talks about my family. And,
yeah.
But the thing about it is, she wasn't talking to me in person. She was getting other people to talk to me. So she'll get her friends to talk to me. So whatever I say, go back to her friends just to get to her. And I told her, go fuck. I shouldn't say, I told her to get loose. I can't say the word. I told her to screw herself.
Yeah.
And then she moved schools 3 months later. So wow. I didn't get to see her. And then I moved schools and I ended up in the same school she was.
Oh, God. That must have been very awkward.
We became friends again.
Yeah.
And then basically it was the last... Like, it was like almost the end of year 7, almost going to high school, and we had a big fight, and I told her to go screw herself again. This fight almost turned into a big fight. We had like other people from, we had other people from different classes just having a fight too. It was like really big.
Wow. All right, well, we might end the episode here. Thanks for listening, guys. Go check out our Instagram. Is it that nerdy? I also have a crime podcast now that I do on my own. Chills and Chats on podcasts, on Spotify or Anchor. And